Cannabis is becoming legal, well, sort of, in states across the United States and is thus precipitating a real estate green gold land rush for cannabis farmland. And so we ask, what is the value of cannabis farmland?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1083rd edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends up there in Victoria who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Strubia on the boards. Hello, Jason.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Jason, I have a question for you.
Yes?
Have you ever heard of tulip mania?
Never.
You haven't?
Nope.
Ooh, then maybe I could sell you a tulip.
I'm intrigued.
You're intrigued. Okay. Folks, before the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937, cannabis was grown out in the open in farmlands throughout the United States. The plant was, in most all respects, a strategic national asset, as its fibers were used for many different purposes. After 1937, the plant was forced into hiding in the deep forests of the nation's backcountry, and more recently under the high-voltage lights of basements, garages, and warehouses. No longer a strategic asset, the plant was forced to yield an intoxicant, and as the seasons went along, that intoxicant became very powerful. Now, states across the United States are, in direct contravention to the Single Convention Treaty, pulling the plant back into the sunshine of semi-legitimacy. The effort to legalize the illegal crop and the prospect of selling it for thousands of dollars per pound is precipitating a green gold land rush across the United States. And that leads us to ask, what is the value of cannabis farmland? Well, here to help us get this conversation going today, we have Chuck Allen. Chuck is the ag realty expert for one of the most expensive parcels of farmland in the United States, the Pajaro Valley of California. Welcome back, Chuck. It's been about 113 shows since we last spoke.
Thank you, Michael. Glad to be with you this morning.
So, I looked at on the internet today, and there's a website called priceofweed.com. $300 per ounce here in California, which is like $4,800 per pound. Gosh, Chuck, if we went out and grew 100 plants, we could become millionaires.
Well, and there are many people that have become millionaires and have a real challenge because of those dollars that they have received, because they're all cash dollars.
Yeah, so they're running around like Richie Rich with a bunker full of cash and nowhere to put it, right?
And how to secure it? Yes.
Well, you know, the states are making it legal, I guess, semi-legal. Proposition 64 in California. Other states throughout the United States are making it legal. Have you noticed an uptick in people looking for farmland for the purpose of growing cannabis?
In our area, we'll talk briefly about California. All cannabis that's grown in California has to stay in California. They can't cross state lines.
Mm-hmm. Well, why is that?
It's our state regulation.
So it's a state law.
Yeah, it's a state law. Okay. And the other states who have legalized medical cannabis and recreational cannabis also have those prohibitions. So there are a few people that have come over from Nevada. And Nevada is a good place to grow, but there aren't many people in Nevada, so they want to come to the population of California to enjoy the large population that we have, the market that we
the
have.
The market, right, okay, right. Which is one of the prime indicators of the value of farmland, too, is proximity to market and
that's
whatnot.
That's correct, yes.
Well, when we last talked, we talked about how farmland is valued. So I'd like to go back to that to kind of give us a baseline for our conversation here about cannabis, which, no matter how you look at it, is an extraordinary situation. But if we look at ordinary situations, maybe we can get that baseline. Pajo Valley, some of the most expensive farmland in the United States. So how does Pajo Valley farmland compare with like that farmland around Laramie, Wyoming, for example?
Never been to Laramie, Wyoming, but I have a feeling that we're a little higher in value.
Mm-hmm.
And the microclimate that we have provides a significant extension of our growing season and extension of what can be grown during that growing season. So we have general land leasing values that range from $2,000 to $3,000 an acre per year.
$2,000 to $3,000 per year to rent it?
To rent it, yes. And the rental value drives the sale value,
mm-hmm.
because it is an investment. It's a very good investment, a stable investment. It's an investment that doesn't have, I tell people that the investors, and if you buy it as a user farmer, you are an investor, but they're willing to take a lower return on their investment because they don't have any roofs to fix.
Yeah.
You know,
so it's just raw land.
Yeah. And so the tenants, generally speaking, will pay for the maintenance of the pumps, pay for the real estate taxes, pay for the utility bills, and so the landowner has a net return from that lease income.
So it's pretty straightforward there.
And generally speaking, the market is we call it the capitalization rate of the investment is trending down because interest rates are low, and people do not get much, if anything, on their from the bank.
Mm-hmm.
They put it in farmland.
Yeah, when the bank is charging you money to store your money in their bank, you may as well put it someplace else, right?
And so 4.5% is generally the accepted. Some of the larger investment companies that have been purchasing property will use about a 4.5%. They try to get 5%, but some the first year maybe 4% with the anticipation of increasing the rent rate within the first couple of years after the investment's made.
Good. Well, also with us today we have Olivia Duncan, who's visiting from the University of California. She is a environmental studies student. Olivia, do you know what a microclimate is?
Kind of.
What would you guess it to be?
It's like a climate, but on a smaller scale.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Chuck, you mentioned microclimate as being one of the reasons that we can grow crops for a long time. What is it about our microclimate in the Pajo Valley that allows us to grow crops for a significant period of the year?
It's a good question. And we have, we're in the center of the Monterey Bay. And we have the marine breezes that are cooling, actually. We need the cooler climate rather than the hotter climate. And that a moderate climate that stays somewhere in the 70s, generally speaking, allows plants to grow for long periods of time. And this is a hub for strawberry production, fresh strawberry production.
Mm-hmm. All the delicate things that people want so much. Ooh, the delicious yummies that are so delicate. Now, you can probably grow them anywhere in the world. You can probably grow them in Laramie, Wyoming.
Yes, you can.
But only for a week or two out of the year.
And our harvest season generally ranges from about the last week of March through almost to Thanksgiving if we don't get early rains. So, and there are a few farmers that were harvesting at Thanksgiving time.
Mm-hmm. So really, when it comes right down to it, then the bottom line of it all is that farmland, in conventional sense, is judged by its ability to generate profit for somebody.
By all means, yes.
By all means. And generally speaking, it's not landowners who are the farmers anymore, is it?
That's correct. So many of the farming families that came here from Europe and Asia in the turn of the century, third, fourth generation, that What's the name of the current generation? The
millennials.
Millennials. Yeah, the millennials are.
What are you, Olivia?
Oh, I'm a millennial, but okay. Generation X is right.
Okay, we're going to UCSC and other universities and getting their degrees in as professionals and not wanting to come back to the tractor. Right. So these are families that still have appreciation for their land, but they generally lease
enjoy
it,
living in town and growers. Having the good life. Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. We have Chuck Allen, who is a realtor for agriculture, and we have Olivia Duncan, who is an environmental studies student at the University of California. And, of course, we have you, 831-479-1080. What is the value of cannabis farmland? Let's you and I go out and grow some pot. $5,000 a pound? Boy, if we grew 100 plants, we'd be rich. Drive Ferraris. What do you think? Right back.
Wow, MetroFarm.com says we can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
And we don't even have to own the land, we can lease it year to year.
MetroFarm.com says we can grow fruit on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, vegetables in city greenbelts, and ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
We can even grow flowers on our wooded hillside.
Get all the information you need to grow for profit at MetroFarm.com, including the complete guide to earning 5-, 6-, and 7-figure incomes by farming small parcels of land. Meet the farmers who earn the money. Find experts at MetroFarm.com who will examine your property and assess which crops to grow. Meet consultants who will help steer your project to profitability. And get the latest news about the business of growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
We've always dreamed about farming a small parcel of land. At MetroFarm.com, we can get all the help we need to stop dreaming and start growing.
Wake up out there to the fact that cannabis is selling for somewhere around the neighborhood of $5,000 per pound. So, hey, why don't you and I go out and buy some farmland and start growing cannabis? Why, in a season, we can become millionaires, right? Maybe. Well, let's do some due diligence checking first with Chuck Allen, who is a realtor involved in California ag land. California just passed Proposition 64, which means the recreational use of cannabis is now legal. Well, kind of legal, sort of legal. What is it, Chuck?
It's not for me to say.
Can anybody say? The way I understand it is California has legalized the recreational use of cannabis, but that is in direct contravention to the International Single Convention Treaty that the United States signed in 1962, which forever classifies cannabis as a Class 1 narcotic. So, it's legal in California, not legal in the United States. California is in the United States. I'm confused.
California has medical cannabis regulations, and under those state regulations, a grower can produce about a canopy size of about 22,000 square feet.
And wow.
Yeah, that's pretty significant. Now, canopy size is leaf to leaf, and if you're interpolating that into how much area, growing area in a greenhouse, say, you have to provide space for the aisles and the rows, and so you increase that by a factor of about 25%. So about a 30,000 square foot greenhouse area will satisfy that state regulation. Mm-hmm. Now, our county regulation, Santa Cruz County, Monterey County, San Benito County, San Mateo County, that's basically our Monterey Bay region. I can speak to those different.
So each county has different.
Each county's different conditions. And
each state is different. And the United States says it's all illegal anyway.
And what's really interesting is that none of our counties have actually issued any permits except for cities.
Uh-huh. So it's a city thing right now.
Santa Cruz has permits for dispensaries. I think there's 14 dispensaries.
So, which means you can sell it, but you can't grow it.
Can't grow it. Watsonville has permits for production.
But you can't sell it.
And they opened it up, and then they limited the producers to six.
Six plants?
Six producers.
Six. Oh, okay. So if you're in with the government, you get a permit.
I don't think that was the case.
Quite,
but
okay.
It was the first that were issued, okay. And then.
So at any rate, what we can gather is that the legality of it is muddled all the way through, and everybody's trying to come to grips with the fact that we got to figure it out one way or another.
And we're working there.
And we're working that. Okay, let's go back and talk about where we're going to buy our farmland. Okay, so we're definitely going to go out and buy farmland because that's where we're going to get rich. We're going to get rich growing pot that sells for $5,000 a pound. Why not? Okay, where do we go? What about the Emerald Triangle of Northern California?
Humboldt County is probably the premier production area of our state. And historically, that's been a backbone of their economy, and if you were seeking a place to grow a massive amount, that's where you'd go. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in Mendocino County, it's estimated that 2/3 of the economy of Mendocino County is cannabis. 2/3.
That's a huge.
So it's a giant industry in Northern California.
Correct.
But my question, I filmed marijuana gardens when I worked for NBC up in Mendocino, Humboldt counties. Filmed a lot of them. And it seemed like every cannabis garden we visited had one thing in common, which was it was hiding. Okay? That seemed to be the principal benefit of growing cannabis in Mendocino and Humboldt counties. Is that you can hide it under trees and whatnot. So it was easy to hide. And really, there wasn't anybody left to hide it from because everybody's involved in the business.
Google Earth has made it less easy to hide.
Yeah, probably. But then I wonder why, because there's a huge land rush going on up there right now. People are buying ranches for $1,500 an acre and subdividing them up into cannabis plantations for and selling them for $4,000 an acre, which is not a bad way of making money because you don't even have to grow pot to make the money. But why are people going to Mendocino and Humboldt counties to grow pot? Because it doesn't seem to me like it's the best environment to grow pot. You know, we were talking about the Pajaro Valley, and what makes the Pajaro Valley so special was that microclimate that allows the production of delicate things like berries and leafy greens for nine months a year. But up in Mendocino and Humboldt counties, you know, you grow these crops outside, you have this wonderful weather for a while, and then the rains come. Right in the middle of the harvest, and things start molding and mildewing.
Correct. Typically, in most outside cultivations, they don't call them.
They don't call them farms.
Yeah, you're a cultivator.
Okay.
Is one crop of year, and they all harvest at the same time, and so supply and demand. If you have that heavy supply, down goes the price for that particular harvest period.
Mm-hmm.
And what most people are trying to do is to provide constant supply, and you can best do that with our microclimate and with the abundance of greenhouses that we have in our mm-hmm. Monterey Bay region that were built for cut flowers primarily. And the cut flower industry has been
decimated
because of imported flowers by and large.
So in the California Central Coast, we have an infrastructure of warehouses and greenhouses that are ideal for that kind of production technology then. Can you see any reason why anybody would want to go to Mendocino and Humboldt County to grow outside? It would seem like, as long as it's legal, why don't you go to like Bakersfield where it's really nice and warm?
Well, even with those...
Or Texas.
Those
or
higher prices that you're speaking of, they're... I think the ability to grow a significantly greater quantity is something that the growers seek or the cultivators seek. I'm not up there, so I don't know that answer.
Right.
My specialty is the Monterey Bay region. So
right, which is
here.
Much smaller.
And we're talking about land, mm-hmm. and all of our local government agencies are pretty unified in prohibiting cannabis from being grown in the open fields.
Oh, why is that?
Good question. Security, the spread of seed, certainly most other agricultural...
Messing with a neighbor's gene pool?
Perhaps, or just, I mean, it's a weed.
Uh-huh.
And certainly that's not something that you want spread around. And so most of the local government policies that I've been exposed to are wanting these productions to be inside a fence.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there are certain areas that look like
Fort Knox
concentration
right?
camp, you
yeah.
know, because of so many fencing. The fence building contracting business is doing very well.
Okay, around here, at any rate, nobody wants to go outside because it's out of control. You have less control of everything, right?
Yes, and...
Okay, out there, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, I want to ask you folks out there, where do you think the best place to grow cannabis is? Inside or outside? What do you think? I know some of you are experienced in that regard. Where do you think we should go looking to grow our next cannabis crop so we can make $5,000 per plant? Gosh, you think about it. Let's see. We grow 12 plants, that's like $60,000. If we go 24 plants, $120,000. Oh, my goodness. It's ridiculous. Or is it? 831-479-1080. Pick up your phone and join us. Welcome back, folks. Michael Olson. This is the Food Chain Radio Program, and the food chain we're talking about today is the cannabis food chain. Oh, my goodness, the state of California, other states as well, have legalized cannabis, some for recreation, some for medicinal purposes. Every state seems to have a different direction it's heading, and every county in every state has a different direction they're heading as well. And they're all trying to rationalize themselves with the federal government, who has its own directions too, which are predominantly governed by the single convention treaty it signed in 1962, forever making cannabis a class one narcotic. So what a wonderful messed up, jumbly, bumbly mess we have of cannabis. So why not just grow some and make a ton of money? That's the subject today. We have Chuck Allen, who is with Keller Williams, right? In
yes.
the Pajaro Valley of California, one of the nation's most productive farmlands. Well, will it be also productive in terms of cannabis as it is in terms of berries and lettuce?
I'm not sure what asked the question.
You know, we've become like the top, Pajaro Valley is like the best place in the world to grow berries. Will it be the best place in the world to grow cannabis?
I think it's an excellent, excuse me. The Pajaro Valley consists of North Monterey County and South Santa Cruz County and a little bit of the westerly side of San Benito County.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are three different jurisdictions that
legal jurisdictions
and sets of rules that make up that answer. And I can say that currently the way it looks is that Monterey County is providing more profitable opportunities to growers or potential mm-hmm. growers than Santa Cruz and San Benito County. But San Benito County the supervisors haven't even voted on a policy mm-hmm. yet.
What about the environment? You know, like we were talking about earlier, the microclimate for growing cannabis. Like Napa Valley, of course, you can't grow better Cabernet grapes than you can in Napa Valley. What about the microclimate for cannabis in the Central Coast? Where would be the best microclimate in the world to grow cannabis?
It's a good question, and humidity is an important factor. The plants, most varieties are very susceptible to mold and mildew. Humidity hastens that those conditions. And so the closer you get to the ocean, the more challenged you are to controlling molds and mildews. However, there are very nicely state-of-the-art facilities that exist.
They control humidity, but with fans and whatnot, and dehumidifiers. And
so they're working toward.
But with respect to that, if we're doing all of this inside, why not do it in Anchorage, Alaska?
It's a good question. The cost of power is probably the biggest answer to that question. If you have to pay the utility company for electricity to cool or to heat.
Maybe Las Vegas then, right underneath Hoover Dam.
That's possible. But there aren't any, they're very low population in Nevada.
And you can't sell it to California unless you sneak it into your trunk, right? Something like that. Well, we're going to go to the phones right now and talk with Jim, who has a comment about cultivating hemp for fiber. Jim, welcome to the food chain.
Thank you. Yeah, good morning.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, I know that I've noticed that, hemp is becoming a popular alternative to wood fiber. And I'm wondering, there's all these restrictions as far as growing the cannabis plant on, a certain number of acres. But do you have any information on people's ability to raise hemp as a fiber crop, not as a recreational drug?
That's a good question. I'm going to toss that to Chuck as soon as I ask you a question. Why on earth would anybody want to grow cannabis for hemp fiber for a few bucks a pound when you can grow it for THC for $5,000 a pound?
Well, because there's a much, much larger market for the hemp fiber than there is for the, people can only smoke so much marijuana, but you can use hemp fiber for a lot of stuff, for clothing and for replacing cardboard and doing all kinds of stuff. You can produce a huge amount of it and use it for in paper. You can make paper out of it,
Sure.
And so.
Well, okay, Chuck, what do you think?
It's probably, it's a good question, and it's probably will become a byproduct. There are a significant numbers of uses. I mean, from what I've been told, when you're trimming the small little trimming leaves, those are used and resold. The flowers certainly are what is the target for production. Under the medical cannabis production, the high CBDs is what is being sought from propagation and of plants.
So there's all of these different kinds of cultivars.
That's
you
correct.
You can grow it for THC, you can grow it for CBD, you can grow it for the fiber, probably for even the pulp and the stems, who knows, the curds. So they're all different varieties or cultivars for which you can grow the cannabis plant. But my question always goes back to, why would somebody grow it for, and that's what it was used for before the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937. It was grown throughout the United States. It was everywhere. It was ubiquitous. We used it for everything.
And growing in the ditches, from what I've been told.
Yeah, growing in the ditches.
Of the heartland.
Yes. So, and you could grow it anywhere, and you could grow it by the thousands of acres, which, of course, may come to pass again sometime soon. But why would somebody want to do that when they can grow it for $5,000 a pound?
If I don't mind me cutting in there, I'm aware that everybody's concerned about the Keurig cup, and I've recently read an article that they are planning to use hemp fiber to create biodegradable Keurig cups, and so that is something that would be an interesting marketing.
Okay, so I don't know what's wrong with your phone, but we have a bad phone line here, Jim. But thank you for the notion of bringing up hemp, because many people do bring up hemp. So let's go to Becky and Apt. Becky, welcome to the Food Chain Radio program. You got Chuck Allen here, and we have also Olivia Duncan from the University of California. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Good morning. I am very interested in the second district restriction for people living within the second district of Santa Cruz County not being
okay,
able...
Okay, can you hold on for just a sec? We're going to have to take a quick break. When,
sure.
When we come back, we'll ask about specific restrictions that some districts in some counties in some states... have to ask. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. And today we're talking about cannabis. Oh my goodness, $4,000 or $5,000 a pound? Why don't we go out and grow some? What does the farmland cost? Where should we grow it? All kinds of questions for all kinds of people. Do stay tuned. 831-479 is the phone number today. Question for you. Would you grow it outside or would you grow it inside? 831-479-1080, right back. Welcome back. Food Chain Radio Program, Michael Olson with Realtor Chuck Allen. Chuck was just talking about having sold 5 parcels so far this year and leased about other ones. And what has the price been doing on ag property?
2 years ago, I'll use myself as an example, total ignorance. I went onto a property a couple of years ago that had plants growing. I thought they were Christmas trees. So yeah. That's how far I've come. Excuse me. The listings, the values that these people, these cut flower families placed on their property, at the beginning of 2016, and today the values that are being placed on similar properties that, I'll speak to the word footprint in just a minute, but, is about 100% higher than it was at the beginning of the year.
In the year. Boom.
Yes.
Boom.
What was $1,500,000 for a 10-acre site that has maybe 300,000 square foot footprint is now $3 million.
What do you mean by footprint?
Footprint in Monterey County. Monterey County, I think it was genius. Monterey County supervisors restricted new greenhouse construction. And they said if you wanted to grow cannabis in a greenhouse, you have to buy an old footprint. Now, some of these footprints are on the ground. The old carnation wood truss, wood post, literally have collapsed, but they're a footprint. And so they qualify.
Existing footprints.
Yes,
okay,
yes.
Gotcha.
And so that's, and some of them are a mixed, blended. Some have wood, some have steel, and some have a blended types of structures. But basically, ranges, and maybe a 10-acre site will have 5 ranges, and each of those ranges is a separate, can be a separate unit with a separate cultivator.
Oh, okay.
So now you're starting to have one property that is a subdivision of cultivating ranges. They all have to be fenced with a 12-foot chain link fence, but you have it, and it becomes a challenge to keep everybody working cooperatively together. But it's and you've been talking about $5,000 a pound. I think realistically today it's more like $2,500 a pound.
Ooh, price drop.
Yes, and price outside product is about $1,500 a pound. Inside product maybe $3,000 in warehouses, but in greenhouses, more about $2,500 from what I've been told. Mm-hmm. I'm not in the business of growing or selling. I'm just in the business of helping people find properties to do their thing.
Well, Becky had an interesting comment. She's wondering about a specific legalities of a specific county in a specific state. And so we must remember that all counties have different rules for each different state. So let's ask, let's address Becky's comment here. Becky, go ahead.
Thank you. And thank you for having this discussion on the air. I appreciate it. I've been puzzled, excuse me, by the second district overlay that restricts outdoor growing. And I've researched it a bit and have discovered that it's only in place because the county administrative officer, Susan Moriello, lives in a rural area in District 2 and does not like the smell of cannabis growing in her neighborhood. And she was able to convince Second District Supervisor Zach Friend to get this overlay in place. Now, recently at a Board of Supervisor meeting, Supervisor Caput also requested the overlay because he was worried about the consumption of valuable agricultural land going to wholesale growing of cannabis. And he could not get the other supervisors to give his motion to extend that overlay a second.
Go ahead.
Well, I talked with the new cannabis licensing official, Mr. Dan Peterson, about this overlay. And, you know, when he was hired, he was not aware of that restriction. He saw in the code there was some number of restriction that applied, but he researched it after I talked with him, and we talked further. And he was completely unaware when he was hired of the second district restrictive overlay. I talked with him about, he was on his way to a meeting for a scoping meeting of the EIR, and I asked him to bring to that table the disparity that it brings economically to people when they are required to pay extra high energy costs for lights, heat, ventilation to grow their own medicine. How it affects the housing stock.
Let me ask you.
And the fire danger.
So,
having had a double structure fire in my neighborhood because of electrical overload.
Okay, gotta take a quick break really quickly, Becky, but let me ask you this.
Yes.
Why do we need any restrictions?
Exactly. That's my point. Why do we need any restrictions?
Chuck?
It's a good question, and I think we need restrictions. All agricultural products have restrictions. Restrictions on pesticide use, restrictions on drift, restrictions on, that's why we have an agricultural commissioner. We have zonings that, I deal with the agricultural aspect, not the domestic
aspect. We're just out of time, so we'll have to pick that up when hell freezes over, probably. There will be restrictions on cannabis. That's one thing we can pretty much count on.
And our zonings.
Do stay tuned, folks. This is 831-479-1980. Pick up your phone and join us. What do you think cannabis farmland is worth? Well, when it gets right down to it, it's going to be a brave new world of cannabis farming coming our way, whether we want it or not. It's on the way. Saw a piece in today's paper right here in River City, America, where a strain of cannabis had been developed, bred, to contain 35% THC, tetrahydrocannabinol, the active ingredient in cannabis. You can look at this stuff from across the street and get stoned. And that's what's going on, isn't it, Chuck Allen, with respect to what people are breeding into cannabis now?
Again, the people I work with are focused more on HDC, and I don't have the name for that. That's the pain-relieving
CBD
component. CBD is, yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. But aroma is a big, important factor. And I can say that there are propagators who are actually propagating cannabis plants that have not the skunky smell, but have a pine scent smell, or a, you know, something that's more of a pleasing smell or odor, whatever you want to say. But so that
the skunky smell is from the indica plant from Afghanistan in that neck of the woods.
Okay, that's being worked on right now as we speak. There are different phases of production. I mean, some is for some of the growers are actually growing transplants to sell to others. Some are growing for manufacturers, oils, waxes, and some are growing for edibles. So there's a whole myriad
whole spectrum of things happening. Yes. Michael, welcome to the food chain. Are you still there?
Yes, yes. Good
Fire morning. Away.
Okay, well, before I get to my question, I know we don't have very much time, but the guest, Mr. Allen, mentioned a moment ago transplant.
Yes.
What meaning?
A plug, small plants that are grown in flats, like you'd find in your little, in the store to buy little tomato plants to take into your home garden.
Oh, okay, all right. Sure.
These are transplant, small plants that you can purchase and then put into your...
So that people are selling their genetics, or developing
That's
the genetics
correct.
And selling their genetics.
That's correct.
So this cannabis does that, and that cannabis does the other thing, and so
all
you
right.
take your pick.
And the plan is, under legalized recreational cannabis, people will have the opportunity, to, instead of going to a wine tasting and having different experiences with different flavors and aromas, they'll have the same opportunity for cannabis.
Right. Bill, what do you think?
Yeah, the question came up, where does one think the best land
yes.
is for growing marijuana? I would say it would be around here. I talk about Northern California, and the reason
Why is that?
It's hot and dry. Now, I want to compare this with blueberries. Now, my folks are from the Midwest, and the upper Midwest, where mm-hmm. It's cooler and there's a lot more humidity. Now that climate is perfect for blueberries, and they grow abundantly. And for example, what's 75 cents there is $5 here, and the taste doesn't compare.
There you go.
What I'm saying
Rhubarb
is
too.
This is the perfect environment. It like you've got wine country in Napa Valley. Okay. They call it wine country. I'd say this is pot country. Now, the gentleman said something about...
We're out of time, but we'll take your word for it, Bill. Thank you very much, folks. This has been the Food Chain Radio Program. Too much to talk about and too little time to talk about it. Thankfully, we had Chuck Allen here, who knows everything about agriculture, real estate. And you know what? Cannabis is a farm commodity now.
That's correct.
And it always has been. And so we're coming to a brave new world. Do stay tuned. We'll file this one under Michael Oles's first law of the food chain. Agriculture is the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles. Thank you.
Been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.